Hi there, guys, gals, and non-binary pals. Welcome back to the NeuroCuriosity Club. Today, I have such a good interview for you. I am talking with Rebecca Witzman, a children's book author who wrote the beautiful book Eliza D's Universes about this really cute kid who is night blind and hyperphantasic, which we will discuss what those things are and everything in the episode. But the result is a gorgeous illustration style and amazing disability representation for your kiddos. So, without any further ado, let's dive on in. Hello there, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, and welcome to the NeuroCuriosity Club podcast, the only podcast that I'm aware of that is specifically made for people who are questioning their neurotype and their place in the neurodiversity paradigm. My name is Megan. I am AudiHD, so I'm autistic and ADHD, but this podcast is going to be about so much more than that. Yes, there are going to be lots of autism and ADHD episodes because that's my lived experience. That's what I can speak to. But I also plan on having so many amazing guests on this podcast to talk about everything from dyspraxia to OCD to bipolar disorder to dyscalculia and more. So if you are curious about your brain, get ready to dive in. Welcome to the NeuroCuriosity Club podcast. Hi there, Rebecca. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm so excited for this conversation. It's going to be wonderful. So for all of you listening out there, I am interviewing Rebecca, who wrote this beautiful book called Eliza D's Universes. And it's a children's book, a picture book. It is gorgeous. It was illustrated, hold on, by Victoria Mickey. And we love the illustrations. I know, Rebecca, you said before we started recording that you actually worked with the artist so that the art style would reflect what these beautiful worlds look like inside your head. And oh, I love all of it, but I'm going to stop talking for a minute and tell our listeners a little bit about you.
Sure. So I'm an autistic mother of five. I have two that I gave birth to and three stepchildren. And, you know, have a degree in humanities, and I have been talking to my husband about, I think it's time for me to really use it. And he was fully supportive. And then, you know, I just had that in the back of my head, like, okay, I'm going to use my degree. I'm going to write something. And I didn't know what. Well, one day I was sitting with my 14-year-old and we were talking about college, and I was like, oh yeah, I went to college. I even have a degree. It's like humanities, which is like writing. And she's like, oh, I've never read anything you've written. I was like, I'm a failure as a parent and a failure as a writer, right? So I was like, well, I'll write something for y'all. I'll do that. And so most of my days I spend either taking care of myself, because like I said, I'm autistic. I have hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I have postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome and mast cell activation syndrome. And between that and kids, that's the vast majority of my life. But there was this side time that I was giving myself to be able to work on this project. And that's kind of what I'm going to be doing, is I'm going to be working on my writing to be able to create things like Eliza D's Universes.
Okay, so let's talk about this book. So the idea, was it born sort of out of that conversation with your kiddo when she was like, I've never read anything you've written, and you're like, I should write something for kids, you know, was that, or have you always wanted to be a children's author? Like, tell me more.
Okay, so the very first inklings that I wanted to be a children's book author came in third grade. I was reading, I have it, Ramona Quimby, age 8, right? I was reading the Ramona the Pest and, you know, Beverly Cleary. And I was like, oh my gosh, Beverly Cleary. She is so cool. I wish I could grow up and be like Beverly Cleary, right? That was my first like writer's, you know, experience. And then whenever I was in college, you know, honestly, I started college and I thought it was going to be a math major. I was a math major. And then I, in my English classes, my teacher was like, but you're an English major, right? And I was like, I'm a math major. And she's like, no, you're not. And I was like, yeah, I really am. Nah. And she was right. Right. But I did switch my major. I switched it to humanities. I graduated in that. And whenever people would ask me, what are you going to do with that? I was like, oh, I'm going to write. And they're like, ha ha, sure. Right. And they gave me that treatment. And I was like, yes, I will someday. But yeah, it wasn't until, 2020, I think it was November 2020, whenever I finally was like, look, my husband's name is Nathan. I was just like, it's time. I need to do it. I need to do the thing. You know, I'm existing as just like, right. I have all of my, disabilities or, you know, different abilities to contend with, and then the parenting, but I needed something that was like me too. And so that was whenever I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And then here I am 4 years later, I did it.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So tell us a little bit about Eliza D's Universes. What is the premise of the book? I mean, I know, but tell the listeners.
Oh, sure. So the premise of the book is that I'm also night blind. Now that disability doesn't really come up until it's dark, and then it's significant, especially coupled with my other disabilities or different abilities. So for instance, I am autistic, but I am the hyperphantasic side, which means like I could picture everything in extraordinary detail, and like I could, you know, zoom in into, I can find universes on the inside of a proton if I'm zooming in enough inside of my mind, right? Or I can expand out. And Eliza D's Universes is the expand out version of what I do with my time whenever I'm, you know, exploring my imagination. So in the book, we start with the sun is setting, right? With this night blind, hyperphantasic child. So what happens? As soon as there's no light, it's just pictures in her mind and what she's doing. And often, and this is known about hyperphantasic people, but you picture memories, like a lot of times it's your memories coming up, right? And so she starts with her memories, and it's also starting in a path of memories that she's linked together in her mind, because she starts with like one image of a time that she remembers, followed by another image of a time she remembers, followed by another, but they line up as the sun, the moon, and the stars, the memories that she has of what she's learned. And then another memory of the time she was sitting at her desk and drawing, which is a special interest of hers, right? About her other special interest, which is astronomy, right? And so she got to the point where she's like, okay, well, what's outside the universe though? There's like, yes, the sun, yes, the moon, yes, the stars, and then what? And then her brain, because it's hyperphantasic, pops out of the universe and answers that what? With several different answers, right? Which is why it's Eliza D's Universes. And then we get to see the various different things that her, that she can do with her mind.
Literally amazing. And yeah, for people listening who maybe are a little unfamiliar with hyperphantasia, could you real quick just describe what that's like for you and what that is?
Sure. So there's like a simple test that they give where it's like, picture an apple. And then you're supposed to say, okay, like, what does the apple have a color? If, you know, if you look at it, does it have spots? If you cut it, like, is it juicy? Does it glisten? Like, are there any features? And right. And if you can picture an apple and it has color and it has detail and you can cut it and you see it glistening and you write and interact with this apple in your mind, okay, then you are on that hyperphantasic scale, because most people actually do not do that, which came as like a shock to me. I just kind of thought that's what it was like to be alive.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So, yeah, to figure out that, oh, that's not what other people are doing. It was just right. A shock to the system. But of course that's how everything went. Cause right. I thought everybody, like, obviously I was more bendy than everybody else, but I was like, it's within the realm of being a person.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like that's so many different diagnoses and identities is like, sure, surely everyone is like this. It's that individuation that a lot of us start to do in like our 20s. People are like, why are all these young people like being diagnosed with autism all of a sudden? Like, oh, okay. First of all, because there's more awareness and more acceptance. So of course, diagnosis is going to go up. But also second of all, our 20s are when we start to individuate. It's when we start to realize we are separate from other people. And in learning about that separateness, we start to learn that there are some things about our experience that are not totally average, and which is fine, nothing wrong with it. But yeah, it's so interesting. I love learning about aphantasia, which is like the opposite of hyperphantasia, where you don't visualize anything at all. And then hyperphantasia, I very much fall right in the center. Like I kind of visualize stuff, but it's not crystal clear. It's, you know, but it's there. Whereas, you know, I have people in my life who are aphantasic, where they picture nothing. And they, like you said, just assumed that's how it was. And they were like, I don't understand how people remember people's names so well. Like, I can't remember their faces very well. And it's like, well, of course you can't. You don't picture their face, do you? That's so interesting.
And here's how this translates. That exact same story translates for me. One day I was working in a different state. Like I used to live in a state and then I was in another state. And then somebody came in and I was like, hey, is your name Leah? Did you go to like third grade in this other state? And then she was, and this, we were adults. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, you have a very distinct bone structure, right? So, and I used to use that phrase all the time. And my friends would make fun of me because they're like, why do you talk about bone structure all the time? And I was like, because like, I process things through seeing like these visuals or whatever. And so like, whenever I see a person, I associate the shape of their bones with who they are as a person.
Yeah,
to the
no,
extent
that
that I can
makes
look
sense.
At like a third grader grown up and be like you in that other state, right?
Yeah.
You
Oh,
had a
that's so
distinct
funny.
Bone structure.
I get that all the time from people. They're like, oh my goodness, did you go here? Were you this? And it's never me. And I always have to just respond and be like, I have a very classically Midwestern face. I look like every girl who lives in the Midwest ever. That is why. Hi there. I am interrupting your podcast episode super, super quickly just to let you know that if you want more than just the podcast, if you want to actually talk to me, that is an option. I have something called a discovery call. This is for people who, you know, you're not sure if you want to actually like commit to working with me long term, but you kind of want to learn more. And maybe you have some questions about your brain that, you know, I might be able to help you answer. And that's what the discovery call is for. It is $15 for a half hour call. That $15 is really just to help ensure that people actually show up. When they were free, I had a lot of no shows, which is really hard on my autistic brain with the change of plans last second and everything. So that's all the $15 is for, is just a little incentive to keep your appointment. And I would love, love, love to talk to some of you amazing podcast listeners. So if you're interested, the link is in the show notes, and I'll let you get back to your episode. So tell us a little bit about how you discovered some of your, you know, disabilities or different abilities and everything. What was that process like? And were you like on board with it at first? Did you try to like hide it, or was acceptance easy or hard? Tell us about that journey.
Sure. So growing up, it was just, you know, I was a contortionist and I did all the party tricks, which you're not supposed to do, by the way, but I did do them. And so like, in my around 33 was whenever I first started to try to get help, because definitely I had been in pain a long time, but I just thought that was like normal. I just thought that people just walked around in pain and that's what life felt like, you know, like, because it always felt that way. So, right. So it must just always feel that way. And that's what it's like to be a person. Around 33, though, I needed help with my behavioral issues. Like, I didn't have good control over my behavior. And I did not like that, you know, and I had tried things on the side, but I was finally at the, I'm going to get help. Well, at first it was like, they were trying to figure out like what's going on with me, because they'd try a diagnosis. And then they're like, I actually wait, like, this, I don't think this is actually a good fit, right? There's a few times where they were like, maybe it's this. And then they're like, no, you really don't have, right? It was kind of like a shuffling around the pieces. But during that, I was also injuring myself significantly, frequently, increasingly frequently, right? Because like I had a dislocated knee, I had a subluxed shoulder, I had ribs that would pop out. I had 7 ribs pop out in a year, which was horrific. A disc in my neck would slip. Like I was just having injury after injury after injury. And it was when I once had 3 injuries in a row in a week that I finally was like, something is wrong with me. It's just like, it's not just I'm, you know, right? I was already in physical therapy over and over and over again. And I'd be in there for a shoulder and I was like, well, my hip hurts too. And they're like, we can't actually do anything other than your shoulder unless you go in to get your hip seen too, right? And there was all these kind of like barriers to entry for getting the help, you know, because then I'd have to make an appointment with my doctor and then, you know. So eventually, though, I started writing all of my symptoms down. Just this is, you know, slipped ribs and subluxed shoulder, and right. And that's when my search turned up Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I started reading about that. I was like, yes, this is it. Right. And so I started on the process to get diagnosis. It took me about 4 months, but that was me like significantly putting time in it. I think I had like 29 doctor's appointments. So like it was a gauntlet, right? To like I had to be seen by a rheumatologist and a geneticist and somebody like a cardiologist and somebody to do the lupus testing and all these other things, right? To get all the components into place so that my doctor could give me the diagnosis, which freed up now my physical therapist. If I just complain about anything, they're like, let's work on that, let's work on this, let's, you know, like they're free to help me the way that I need it, which was amazing. Definitely a quality of life change, significant quality of life change. I'm like really doing that. Like my shoulders are back and I have posture now. I used to be kind of like caved in, which is most EDS people, I think it's like 54%, but you know, that's like a don't quote me on that, are caved in sitters. And then you get the W sitting as the second highest position that you'll find EDS people in. But yeah, so it was, but 35 was whenever my partner and my friend told me, I think you're in chronic pain. And I was like, no, I just have the pain you always have. You know, the kind that you feel all the time, just the normal stuff, not like the injury stuff. And they were like, yeah, you're describing chronic pain. And I was like, I'm not talking about like hurting like injury. I just mean like the normal, like the baseline pain stuff. They're like chronic pain though. And I was like, you guys don't feel that? And it was a shock, right? I'm 35 and I'm sitting there and I'm like, life can exist without pain though, right?
Yeah,
Yeah,
wild.
it was shocking to me. But right, here I am at 41. Like I live life without pain sometimes. What? That's amazing. I didn't
Amazing.
even know that was a thing. I get down to a zero sometimes. It's just like, it took a couple of
Wild and
surgeries too.
amazing.
I needed so much stuff, but I did it. And then for the autism, a friend of mine who is a scientist sent me a link that was like, hey, I was watching this video and it said that a, you know, EDS has, you know, perhaps a link with autism, but watch this video because they're describing you. And I was like, what? And that's, I watched that video and yeah, they were describing me to a T. It was just like exactly myself. And I was like, and then I did the thing, right? I went and got set up with a doctor, got, you know, to, I had, you know, the waiting period and then got my diagnosis. And then since then, though, right, I have all these different like tools. And that's what I always needed too. Like I was in therapy for 7 years, and it felt like nothing was ever helping. But now that I know that I'm autistic, it was like, oh, that's because it's stuff I don't need help for. I was trying to make
Totally.
myself, right? I was trying to make myself into somebody I can't even be, instead of accepting, like, okay, sometimes I'm going to struggle. Like, sometimes I have one word in my head and there aren't any other words except for that one, right?
Oh
That is a
yeah, I
very
know that
frustrating
feel.
experience. Right. And so, but now I know what it is. It was way scarier when I was like, I don't know how to not do that. Right. And it would be
It's
frustrating and just.
scarier. Yeah, it's scarier when you feel like it's something broken and it's like, oh no, oh, something's bad, something's off, something's broken. It's much more, at least for me, and it sounds like for you too, it's much more soothing to hear like, okay, it's not broken, it's just like sideways and it's allowed to be sideways. You know, that's fine.
Sure. Well, and I like to think of it as differences, right? I'm very different, and that's okay. Like, I'm okay. It's okay if I'm different. And that gives me a lot of solace, because before I was just like, oh no, something's wrong, and maybe I'm dangerous, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Is different scary? I'm not sure. And I would also have meltdowns and stuff like that, and I didn't have a word for what it was. And I'm like, am I a bad person for melting down? Because it was never like an externalized thing. It was a very collapsey internalized thing or whatever. But it still was terrifying until I knew what it was.
Oh yeah. I know for a long time I was misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder, which made sense at the time. My doctors were doing their best. I was doing my best. There's no blame to assign there. It just is a common misdiagnosis.
Yeah, that's what I had that been misdiagnosed with as well.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Look at us. And for the longest time, I thought I was having these like really short but really intense mixed episodes because I had all this energy, but like all this depression. And I was like, that has to be what it is. No, sweetie, they were meltdowns. You were melting down. So it's nice to have language that helps me because mixed episode, it was kind of just like, well, this is a really dangerous state. You probably need to be highly medicated to get out of it. And that's all we can say. Whereas an autistic meltdown, they're still not like, oh, do this and it'll end. But it's more like, this is your brain. When it's completely overwhelmed, you need to find a way to reduce your input so that you can have healthier output. And like that has helped me a lot more, you know, because that's more accurate to my experience, you know.
Yeah, and that's the same for me. They tried all these medications, all these bipolar medications. None of them did anything. If anything, a few of them made things much worse. Right? I wasn't getting any help from those. And then it was but I was being helped by like other tools. Like other tools worked. I love DBT. It is like one of my favorites. I feel like every human on the planet would benefit from DBT. Like, why don't they teach it in school? That's where I'm at, right? That helped significantly. And then, but like meds, as far as meds go, I mean, like I have like some that work for me. I don't know if you discuss meds or not on your
Yeah, it's
channel.
a very medication neutral space. If meds work for you,
Oh,
awesome.
okay.
If they don't work for you, awesome. Like it's all
Oh,
good. It's
okay. Then
all
I'll just say what mine are, because like here's what works for
good.
me, right? Because I'm happy. And it was a path too, right? To get to a point where you have like these meds and you're like, this is the
Yes.
magic combination. So I take magnesium D, B complex. I was on GABA for like a year and a half before I had the symptoms of you don't need GABA anymore, which was exciting. I was told that I would get there, and then I did, which was like you go into a room and you have no idea what you're doing. And it's more than like normal brain fog. It's sort of like second to second brain fog. And then you stop the GABA, and then everything just kind of balances out because it's binding to the excess glutamate in your brain. And whenever there's no longer an excess, then you stop, and then you get to be a person that doesn't need that because you don't have the excess glutamate. Yay! And then
Amazing.
I take hydroxyzine at night to sleep. So is that, we got one more. What is it called? Sertraline, intermittent sertraline for my PMS symptoms.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, tell me about it. We definitely we've had a guest on the podcast talk about like PMDD before and how, you know, different things that help with that. So yeah. Oh my goodness. It has been such like a joy talking to you today. This has felt very natural. I love talking to all of the amazing guests I have on this podcast. It makes me feel so seen and so held because it's like, oh, my people. Yes. So if people would like to check out or purchase Eliza D's Universes, where can they go find that?
It's wherever books are sold at this point. Like if you want to go to your local bookseller and say, hey, I want this book, they can order it because it's set up through Ingram. You can also get it on Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, any place on the globe, pretty much. It's out there. So if you want it, you just go where you buy books and it'll be there or it'll be available to be ordered.
Right. Oh, that's amazing. I'm so glad. Seriously, if you have kiddos, they're going to love this book. It's so bright and gorgeous, and it introduces them to people who might not be like them or people who might be like them. And either way is such a positive experience for your kiddo. So me and my kiddo are going to read this tonight. So I'm excited. So I always ask at the end of every podcast episode for our people who tend to zone out. It's time to zone back in. Let's say people got a little zoned out, a little busy. What's like one thing you would want someone as they zone back in to like take away from our conversation today? One thing you'd want people to know about maybe any of your abilities, disabilities, or about the book?
I think the thing that I would say is that for every hour that you aren't able to do something, you are doing what you can do. And whenever you're building your abilities, you're stacking everything in a different spot. And that's who you are. And that's your strength. And leaning into what your abilities are instead of focusing on what you can't do is the thing that's helped me the most in my growth.
I absolutely love that. I think that's great. Well, thank you so much.
I'm trapped in bed and so I can write.
Yes, exactly. And I do think, you know, there's something to be said for just learning to recognize what your limitations are. That way you're not like constantly pushing yourself into something that's not right for you. But there's also something to be said for finding joy in what you can do. And I think there's like grief and gratitude all mixed up together when you have disabilities, you know, and taking the time to explore that, I think makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think that's the only reason the book even exists is, you know, I stopped focusing on what I couldn't do, because that was a depressing time for me. Right. And to break out of that depression took like, why am I not writing? I could be a writer, right? I write, right? And then being able to focus in on like, okay, this is who I am instead of who I'm not.
Yes. Oh, okay. We're going to leave it with that because I think that's a beautiful thought to leave it on, but thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your book. Everybody go get it. And listeners, I will talk to you next Saturday. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. If you did, I would so appreciate it if you would leave a review or a rating or whatever it is that you can do on the platform you're listening on. It really helps get the podcast out to other people who need to hear it. So again, thank you for listening. Thank you for the review if you decide to leave one, and I will see you next time.